Kentucky woman, she shine with her own kind of light. It's Women's History Month, and today we're talking with UK history professor Melanie Beals-Gone about her new book, A Simple Justice, Kentucky Women Fight for the Vote, which chronicles the many high-profile and unsung heroes of the suffrage movement. Our conversation started with a discussion on the complicated legacy of Laura Clay.
I've referred to Laura Clay as a flawed hero before. She's the name that is most recognized when we talk about Kentucky suffrage, although really we should talk about all the Clay women, because she comes from a family of women, of four sisters and a mother, who all start working on behalf of suffrage in the 1870s, largely because her father had treated her mother so badly. And Laura Clay goes on to lead the Kentucky movement for three decades. She's going to establish the Kentucky Equal Rights Association and be its president. Even after she steps down as president, she continues to be very instrumental in running its business. She's also involved in the national movement, the National American Woman Suffrage Association. She's an officer of that organization for a number of years. She becomes probably the most recognized Southern suffragist. And so Laura Clay, really important to this story here in Kentucky.
Now, when it comes down to that moment of truth and the 19th Amendment, she's on the other side of the issue. Talk about that.
Yeah, and that's part, I guess, why I would say she's a flawed hero. Laura Clay, she, as soon as Congress passed the Susan B. Anthony Amendment in June of 1919, she resigns immediately from CARA. She establishes a competing organization, and she begins to do everything possible to defeat the amendment. She doesn't want to see the states ratify it. She doesn't want to see Kentucky ratify it, although her efforts don't work. And Kentucky in January of 1920 does ratify the amendment. She puts in one last-ditch effort in Nashville. Tennessee was the final state needed to ratify in August of that year. And she goes to Nashville and volunteers with the anti-suffrage organizations that are there and tries to stop this reform from happening. Now, Laura Clay wants the vote. That's not at issue here. She has spent her whole life trying to achieve the vote, but she does not want it if it's going to come through federal action. And so she tries to stop that.
And you mentioned in your book, and you've said it in your presentation, that this was as much about race as it was gender. So let's talk a little bit about that as well.
Yeah, you know, the big question. I start the book with Laura Clay going to Nashville, and that's the opening scene, and then spend much of the rest of the book trying to understand how could someone who had given her whole life to this cause step away when it was finally in reach. And race has a whole lot to do with it. And I said Laura Clay, a flawed hero. Laura Clay becomes the champion of Southern suffragists. A lot of these Southern suffragists called themselves states' rights suffragists. They wanted state constitutional amendments. They were okay with that and women winning the vote that way. But if it meant the federal government and getting involved in their business, they were having no part in it. And Laura Clay really champions that Southern cause, that the idea that suffrage should only come through state means and not through the federal government, because if the federal government intervenes in elections, might intervene in Southerners' efforts to disfranchise Black males. They didn't want the federal government involved in their business, and so defeating the Anthony Amendment is very important in their minds and Laura Clay's as well.
And you point out in the book that African Americans were voting, and it was
the sheer numbers of them that caused the legislature to strip away suffrage when it comes to the school boards and things of that nature.
Yeah, I mentioned Kentucky women voting as early as 1838. They're voting in school elections. You had to be a widow. You had to own property. So not many Kentucky women, only in certain parts of the state. But they had had that right. And in 1901, in Lexington, a lot of women turn out, Black women turn out to vote in that school board election. They had a Black administrator they wanted to get rid of. They did not like him. And so they turn out in high numbers. And the following legislative session, the legislature revokes that right. And so race here in Kentucky, it's very important in understanding the story of how women achieved the ballot.
Now, I got to ask about the other name synonymous with Kentucky suffrage, and that would have to be Madeline McDowell Breckinridge, who you refer to as Madge. I didn't know that she was known as Madge.
Yeah, that was her nickname. She certainly family called her that. Madeline McDowell Breckinridge married to the Lexington newspaper editor, DeShay Breckinridge, a progressive reformer. She is really amazing in the amount of energy she gives to causes, things that in Lexington, if you live in Lexington today, you still benefit from Madeline McDowell Breckinridge and the work she did at the turn of the century. And she wants the vote so she can further some of those other causes. She was involved in fighting tuberculosis. She suffered from tuberculosis. Playgrounds, building playgrounds for kids, juvenile court reform. She wanted all those things to happen and knew that she needed the vote to accomplish those goals. And so she becomes the president of the Kentucky Equal Rights Association in 1912 and leads that organization through several different important periods, including leading Kentucky to ratify the amendment in 1920.
And what about Sophonisba Breckinridge?
That was Madeline McDowell Breckinridge's sister-in-law. She grew up here in Kentucky, but moved to Chicago as a young adult, and she became really created the social work profession. An amazingly productive reformer. And a name known in national circles. There's a new biography that Anya Jabor has written about her. But she helps. I think a lot of ideas that are coming to Kentucky are coming through Chicago, and Sophonisba Breckinridge has something to do with shaping what Kentucky women are trying to accomplish.
I want to talk about your research methods and everything, and What did you know about this story before launching into this project? And what did you learn after?
Well, I will say this. I never dreamed that I would be writing a book on suffrage. As a woman's historian, I guess in my mind, it always seemed a little too obvious. You know, when people asked you, if you said, oh, I study women's history. Oh, so you women getting the vote. It was the first thing that people thought of. And so I never imagined myself digging into this. But with the centennial, the anniversary coming up, I got interested. And it's the backstories that draw you in. And I'd always been familiar with Laura Clay and her role in this movement, Madeline McDowell Breckinridge, through some of my other research. But really, when I started to dig in, when I started to get to know other women, Josephine Henry, for instance, Eugenia Farmer, all these women, these stories that no one ever talks about, and the courage, and also, again, some of the flaws of these women. They're very human when it comes down to it. And looking at some of their decisions, we can applaud them for the steps they took to promote democracy. But at the same time, we can criticize some of the ways they undermined democracy by trying to limit which women would be able to use these new rights. And so I think for me, I knew going in that I was going to find that. But when I started to really dig out these stories and put a human face to them and be able to, while I can hold Laura Clay accountable, I can understand her in certain ways, and I can use her as a way for myself and others, hopefully, to learn from past movements and to make sure we do things differently moving forward.
What do you want the big takeaway to be for someone who maybe has never studied this issue, comes to this book? What's the big takeaway from this?
Well, one thing I'm hoping is I weave in a lot of just basic Kentucky history. So I hope someone picking it up will better understand the state that maybe you were raised here and you hear names, and knowing the history really gives us needed context, and more, we need that more so than ever in 2020, I think. But I do want people to, in reading this, to understand that this was a victory in many ways, but an incomplete victory, and to understand how racism and classism, these things are embedded into our state's history. They've made us who we are today. We need to tell these stories in order for us to move forward, because I think we're in a place where racism, we're never going to heal our racial wounds as a nation until we acknowledge the past. And so this book is, I think, helps in that regard, in thinking about even an issue like suffrage, which we might think of as separate and apart from racism. Racism is embedded in American history in important ways. And so I hope people will really take that away from this book, too.
And the book is A Simple Justice, Kentucky Women Fight for the Vote by Melanie Gohn. It's available through University Press of Kentucky. And thank you very much for your time today, Melanie.
Thank you, Alan.
Melanie Beals-Gohn is a professor of history at the University of Kentucky and the author of A Simple Justice, Kentucky Women Fight for the Vote, from University Press of Kentucky. You can hear the director's cut of our interview at WUKY.org.